Back when the Occupy movement was at its height, one of the arrested activists gave police her name as Louise Michel. The police, of course, had no idea of her historical reference. Louise Michel was a famous participant in the Paris Commune. Calling up her name is an indication 150 years later that the Commune continues to inspire and resonate today. Michel was one of the pétroleuses, the female firebrands spreading petrol, burning down the established order. That at least was the rhetoric of the forces that ultimately destroyed this self-proclaimed République des Travailleurs, Workers' Republic, outraged, among other things, by the Commune's strong participation and leadership from women. One of the few who survived the horrific massacre by bourgeois troops that ended the Commune, Louise Michel was sentenced to exile in a French penal colony somewhere east of Australia. In April, Another World is Possible did part one on the Paris Commune. You can find that program by going to the Old Mole website on kboo.fm for April 12th. That episode covered some of the accomplishments of the Commune, the way workers who seized power rethought what the state should be and how they, workers, could administer it, rethought education and culture and childcare, moved to eliminate colonialism, capitalism, nationalism, and wars. That episode focused on the role of women. It could just as easily have focused on the way in which workers in power transformed the very nature of work itself. One's labor, no longer a commodity to be sold to an employer, but an activity undertaken for the benefit of society. All this in just 72 days, from March 18th to May 28th. A couple of Old Mole listeners raised challenges to our account. One wondered why we paid so much attention to a localized, relatively brief event so long ago, why it mattered when historically it had so little chance of success. Another, acknowledging the Commune's importance, thought we should simply have relied on Karl Marx's classic account of it, rather than highlighting areas we think are of most interest now. Both these challenges to the Old Mole program raise interesting and complex questions. The first revolves around what we mean by success. You may have heard the folk wisdom that the struggle for a better society will be a series of lost battles until we win the war. That may be too bleak a prediction, but our gains are seldom straightforward. Today's episode on race norming is a case in point. Each advance occasions a backlash, and reforms are frequently co-opted, but we build our understanding and capacities in the course of struggle. That's what will pay off further down the road. We look to the Seattle General Strike of 1919, for instance, even though it lasted only 6 days, because it demonstrated that ordinary workers could take over the running of a city closer to home. The Paris Commune, though it lasted but 72 days, provided inspiration and vision for struggles to come. One of the people it most inspired was Karl Marx. Another was Peter Kropotkin. Neither Marxism nor anarchism would be what they are today had the Paris Commune not happened. It forced Marx to engage politically in ways he had not before, to descend from the realm of abstraction to the realm of strategy and tactics. What this meant concretely was, first, having to think through how to support an actually existing revolutionary effort, of which he also had criticisms. It's the same question we might face with regard to contemporary Cuba or Venezuela. Do we sit back and point out all their faults? Or do we attempt to empathize with their difficulties and dilemmas and offer our critiques in the context of support. Marx's initial response was one of revolutionary purity, of abstraction. The Paris Commune was not fully living up to his abstract vision for what a proletarian revolution should be. Realizing the inadequacy of that position, learning how to offer critical support, made Marx all the more effective in responding to real-life worker struggles. It also was the lessons he took from the Paris Commune that turned him to the study of the Russian obshchina, the peasant communes, and turned him away from his rigid notion that all societies had to pass through the same exact stages before having a chance to achieve his vision of the better society. He came to realize that different countries might have different paths to socialism. Finally, in light of the Commune, Marx reconsidered his position on what role the existing state apparatus could play under socialism and in the transition to socialism. In other words, can we just adapt the state as it is, or do we have to think of a very different type of institution to coordinate social activity and the building of a new society? As a result, he reconsidered and rewrote part of the Communist Manifesto from 2.5 decades before. If you take a look, he talks explicitly in the new preface about how the Paris Commune caused him to change his views. For Kropotkin, the impact of the Paris Commune was even greater. The revolutionary efforts by Parisian workers persuaded him that fundamental social change was possible, and that it, and not his impressive scholarly work in geography, was his true vocation. As to the second challenge, why not simply rely on Marx's superb account of the Commune in his book, The Civil War in France? I think I've partly answered that already, both in emphasizing the role of women in our last episode, an emphasis different from Marx's, and in talking today about the change in his own perspective. There's a further reason. Marx was writing for activists of his own time and for the future. He was condensing events and highlighting lessons, not aiming at an account as a historian might write it. As we think about what's important to us, our lessons and questions overlap with what Marx highlighted, but aren't the same. Before we turn to those lessons and questions, here's some of the music from the Commune. A song about dreams and love, but also suffering and heartache. A gentle, reflective anthem, maybe not what you'd expect from a militant revolution. I played and discussed a couple versions of the first stanza last time. Here are the following three stanzas of Le Temps des Cerises, The Time of the Cherries, or Of the Cherry Blossoms, composed by Jean-Baptiste Clément, a participant in the Paris Commune.
Mais il est bien court le temps des cerises où l'on s'en va de cueillir en rêvant des pendants d'oreilles. Cerises d'amour aux robes pareilles tombant sous la feuille de sang. Mais il est bien court le temps des cerises pendant le corail qu'on cueille en rêvant. Quand vous en serez au temps des cerises, si vous avez peur des chagrins d'amour, évitez les belles. Moi qui ne crains pas les peines cruelles, je ne vivrai point sans souffrir un jour. Quand danserez au temps des cerises, vous aurez aussi des peines d'amour. J'aimerais toujours le temps des cerises, c'est de ce temps-là que je garde au cœur une plaie ouverte. Et dame fortune en m'étant offerte ne pourra jamais fermer ma douleur. J'aimerai toujours le temps des cerises et le souvenir
That was Cora Vauquer singing my favorite version of Le Temps des Cerises. Here's another favorite, Patricia Kohlberg, with my translation.
But it's very short, the time of the cherries, where we go off dreaming to pick some earrings, cherries of love in similar dress, falling under the foliage as drops of blood. But it's very short, the time of the cherries, coral pendants that we harvest while dreaming. When you are there at the time of the cherries, if you are frightened of love's sorrows, avoid the pretty girls. I, who don't fear the cruel pains, I won't live without some day suffering. When you are there at the time of the cherries, you too will have the pains from love. I shall always love the time of the cherries. It's from that time that I keep an open wound in my heart. And Mistress Fortune, in being offered to me, will never be able to end my sadness. I shall always love the time of the cherries and the memory I guard in my heart.
So what then are our takeaways from the Paris Commune? I would emphasize these. The first is that the Commune didn't just begin on March 18th, when the history books place it. When the women of Montmartre faced off with the army, which was attempting to steal the neighborhood's means of defense, after the French army surrendered to the Prussian invaders. Rather, it was the culmination of long-term organizing. France had had popular rebellions in 1830 and 1848, the latter less than 23 years before. Veterans from that uprising were still around, still agitating, and offering advice and inspiration, much as the older Old Moles attempt now. A better instance in the U.S. might be the labor upsurge in the 1930s and how it was heavily sprinkled with older wobblies years after U.S. government repression had disbanded much of the IWW. In Paris in 1871, as in Lyon, Marseille, and other urban centers, workers were aware of contemporary revolts in Ireland, Hungary, and Poland. They knew of the struggle to free slaves in the U.S. and serfs in Russia, and of the revolt against British colonialism in India. Working-class discussion clubs, more like political debating societies for the masses with great popular attendance, had been meeting for at least 2 years prior. Their existence and popularity resulted from a concession workers forced on the repressive and censorious emperor, Louis-Napoleon Bonaparte, as he sought to win lower-class support for his increasingly shaky regime. Already in 1869, Parisian clubs were debating what the Commune would look like, and meetings began and ended, just like Old Mole meetings, with the invocation, Vive la Commune! My Old Mole colleagues will be excited to hear that. So, a spontaneous uprising on March 18th, yes, but the outcome of years of preparation. Just like the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955 was triggered by Rosa Parks' spontaneous action, but was really the result of years of preparation and organizing. In Paris, the Commune was the outcome, too, of a weak and incompetent government that instigated and lost a war against Prussia, and a divided ruling class. We'll come back to that divided ruling class. For our second takeaway, the Commune failed because it was isolated. Had workers in Lyon and Marseille held out, major cities that established their own communes, it would have helped. But even so, the working class by itself was insufficient. Workers in Paris knew that and tried to reach the French peasantry, but started too late and were thwarted. The French government, which had fled the city of Paris, set up a blockade around it, joining with Prussian troops, preventing physical contact between the commune and the peasantry. The mainstream press printed blatant and outrageous lies about the commune. Activist workers had not established ties to the peasantry beforehand, and now were reduced to trying to send leaflets over the blockade by hot air balloons. Confining the commune to the geographical limits of Paris raises issues that we try to address otherwise on Another World Is Possible, often by looking at utopian and dystopian literature. Here I want only to indicate them. The first is whether desirable alternative forms of social organization, participatory and democratic, need to be small in scale. The communards generally thought so. The vision they came up with, the vision they offered the peasantry and workers in other countries, was a federation of communes, abolishing national boundaries, abolishing the state. The second such issue is the efficacy of building small alternatives within the confines of an exploitive society. Can co-ops, for instance, in our own society, be a means of advancing us toward a more comprehensive social transformation? Or are they instead mainly a way to carve out a bit of decent space for a few people, while even reducing pressure for change? Our third takeaway relates to the bourgeois response, to the response by those who employed the workers, the merchants and manufacturers, and their spokespeople in the realm of journalism and culture. This is the group that had gained significant economic power and some political power as a result of the French Revolution in the prior century. This is the group that would dominate France from this time forward in the Third Republic, the bourgeois republic, after the emperor was forced out. This is the group whose different interests and different perspectives from the older, rural, landowning class resulted in a division among the ruling elite that opened the way for the uprising that became the Commune. Finally, this is the group that would unleash terror on the Paris Commune, massacring upward of 25,000 people in street fighting that lasted nearly a week, arbitrary murders for days afterward, and around 50,000 sentenced to prison or bleak prison exile. The lessons here are complex and important for us. First, in pushing for more political power, the liberal bourgeoisie was quite willing to be publicly critical of social inequities and the lavish expenditures by the rulers. With the workers' uprising, however, those liberal critics turned reactionary. As workers, they thought they could control, overstepped the boundaries set for them, became excessive in challenging property rights the bourgeoisie held sacred. Second, bourgeois power rests on dividing workers, urban from rural in 19th century France, skilled from unskilled, black from white in 20th century US, and by any social category they can use to promote divisions in our own times. Third, the bourgeois class and its state cared more for property than they did for human lives. Crushing the Paris Commune was what enabled the class alliance between the bourgeoisie and the large rural landowners, enabled, in other words, what became the so-called Third Republic. The massacre, not just the defeat of the Commune, but the massacre, served two purposes. It destroyed the class opposition from below, of course, but it also reassured the right wing, the landed aristocracy that still favored monarchy, that the new bourgeois republic could control the insurgent poor. Behind the political forms, empire, monarchy, republic, whatever, there are class forces. What form will our state take in the better society to come? And speaking of empire and imperialism, the French troops that were sent to massacre the Communards were brought back for that purpose from Algeria. They were country boys, systematically trained in ferocity to conquer a foreign population that resented and resisted their presence. Imperialism is also a threat to the population of the mother country and to efforts at social change there. I've been talking in much too quick a fashion about the Paris Commune and on its resonance and relevance for us on its 150th anniversary. This has been Norm Diamond for Another World is Possible on the Old Mole Variety Hour.